Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host Mo Dockheel, and today my guest is Ben Epstein from SB Nation's Limited Upside Podcast. He's a co-host with Mike Prada, who's also been on the show. Today we're going to talk about the Sixers. We're going to get into what playoff teams didn't make it last year that might this year, and a lot more. So let's just tip it off. Ben, how you doing?
I'm great. Mo, thanks for having me on, man.
Oh, dude, my absolute pleasure, man. I missed you last week, so I was like, I got to get Ben this.
Yeah, I know. People think I was ducking the Clippers podcast for some reason. It's like, I lived in LA. I love talking about the Clippers, but I'm glad we're doing it now.
Yeah, well, they might make it into the conversation. Yeah. They might not. We'll see how we go. We got to talk about it. I mean, we're recording tonight on, you know, Wednesday evening. It's halftime of the Sixers game. And listen, Joel Embiid just put on a show in the first half of this preseason game.
Yeah, that was, it was a lot of things. First and foremost, it was good to see him on the basketball court. That's obviously the first check in the box there. We haven't gotten to see Joel play in months now. Obviously, he went out early last year. But man, that first half was inspiring. Just the myriad of shots he has at his disposal is really up there in the whole NBA. I mean, one-legged shots like Dirk. A three that he hit when the play time had expired, or you know,
yeah,
from
the clock
was dead
from Steph Curry range.
Yeah, about half court, and he shot it like a free throw. And so, like, you know, I watch him with the eyes of someone who's like inspired by how good he is and can be, and also so cautious. He goes to the ground still, even in that incredible first half we just watched. He hit the ground like four times. So big trees fall hard.
My heart stopped when he went into the photo guys on the baseline.
Yes.
And I literally was just like, shit.
Of course. Because if he hurt his knee, that's not insured in the new contract.
Right. And that's
just his ankles and back.
Right. And let's get into it. You know,
sure.
He showed why he's worth that extension. But we also were experiencing why it's such a risk, you know, by us freaking out every time he falls. You know, have you looked into the details of the extension at all yet?
You know, I read the same things that have kind of been circulating about minutes played. He obviously has a cap, kind of an either or. I think if he misses 25 or more regular season games because of injuries to either the ankle or back, but only those two parts of the body, and plays less than, I think it's like 1,000. I think it's 1,650 total minutes. Yeah, 25 games, or there's a minutes limit on there too, or cap. Then we have like an option of releasing him for cost savings. But I'm like, God, I don't love the idea of releasing him for money reasons at any point. It seems like something that's like the worst case scenario. And if that happens, then this was all for nothing in the first place. It's like, yes, we have a financial flexibility to start over, but now we have the cornerstone of the franchise invested as well as on the roster, you'd think. And those are two things you don't get all the time. It is equal parts nerve-wracking to watch him, and also you watch with those wide eyes of like seeing something for the first time, which is an unbelievably gifted, massive person.
Yeah, and you know, for me, if he's healthy, we're fine. You know, if he doesn't miss a ton of games each year and stuff like this, this is what he's worth. Like, we're seeing it on I got all excited in the first half of a preseason game. So, I mean, like, this is what he's worth. I mean, he showed us in the 31 games of Embiid last year, you know, like, yeah, healthy, he's a force in the NBA and really an amazing player.
On both sides of the court, too. I mean, just he comes in and on the defensive end, teams just stop what they're doing. You know, they have to be fully aware of where he is, and that is disruptive.
I mean, Alan Crabb learned today that he's been.
Yeah.
I mean, he swatted that thing pretty hard.
He hit it with like his elbow.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, even if he misjudged it, his armpit would have gotten the block. So yeah. I mean, yeah, he defensively he's a two-way player. It's great. He's a force at the rim defensively, and he could, like you said, do anything on the offensive end. He could hit any type of shot, the one-legged Dirk, the three-pointer, the pick and pops, rolling, all that stuff. So he's quite a handful. So we're gonna keep our fingers crossed, knock on wood, yeah. Hope he stays healthy, just because the NBA needs 10 years of a healthy Embiid, just for how fun.
Agreed. Yeah, and without even my homer lens on right now, he's the type of personality you want in the league. And ultimately, you want to inspire another generation of big guys. We have very influential guards right now. It's been a point guard and two guard laden league for decades. You'd love to see the, you know, inspiring of bigs to kind of go out there and understand those guard mentalities, but still be comfortable being a big dude and being aggressive on the defensive end as well. And look, I think Embiid's the type of person can also inspire people from you're talking about African Cup of Nations players, and like you, there's a whole extension to having a Cameroonian, charismatic, interesting person who has something to say for himself that transcends outside of the basketball court as well. So you want him to be influential inside and outside the lines.
I mean, I love it. He signs the extension and then FaceTimes Chandler Parsons. I mean, I know the optics may not be that great, but I still thought it was hilarious. I go like, this is fun. This guy gets it.
He gets it. Yeah, he gets like callback, like improv comedy callback.
Yeah, he's just having fun. Like, you know what? If we're to have one player in the NBA to have a reality TV show, I just want it to be Embiid, because I just think he constantly just, what can I do that's fun today? You know, if he has a day off. And I think we would get that from him.
I want to play some tennis with him, man. That's my new goal. You know, tennis is my sport, Mo. It's what I played in college, and I could definitely do some customer hitting with him, helping out with his forehand or something.
There we go. Okay. we definitely need film on that one day. We need to make that happen and get a camera on that one. But the Sixers aren't just all Embiid. You know, we're watching Ben Simmons. Fultz isn't playing right now, but, you know, he's had a preseason that everybody's kind of talking about, which we'll get into. And just, you know, a lot of other players, you know, kind of, this is my first game really watching them, and I forgot how deep they are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what stood out to me tonight as well, which was, you know, they're almost best when TJ McConnell's playing with Embiid. They have really good synergy. They work really well off each other. Great rub screens, and you always see somebody open. And TJ is a guy who moves the ball a lot. And we're talking about probably the third string point guard, if not out of rotation point guard, which he'll get his minutes because he's a valuable piece on the defensive end as well. But, you know, I watch his team. I think Dario Saric, if he's going to be a stretch five, he showed a lot tonight too. He hit like four threes in the second quarter. And obviously that's, you know, peak Dario is if he's hitting his shots. He's a little bit streaky, but you hope to see some consistency. And he was really good in FIBA this summer as well. You know, he's the type of player who in this NBA, as it caters more and more to the, you know, the small forward from the 90s who would be a center in today's game, that's what Dario can be. And when you see Dario and Simmons play together, and there's all these weird, very interesting size dynamic combinations the Sixers can offer. And you're seeing it. You saw a lot of tonight. And you rub in Redick and Covington. You know, and Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrah, and you have guys who slash and shoot, and, you know, it looks like there's a lot of pieces, but you're right. You can't play all those guys, though, and you need Fultz to get minutes and get his shine, because, I mean, we can talk more about that whenever you'd like here, Mo, but, like, the Fultz thing is legitimately weird.
Right.
It's not something I've had, like, precedent for in how I've watched the game. Like, you know, we never had this much access into training camps and preseasons as we do in, like, this era of basketball where it's not just like the beat writer who's following it. You know, we have all the video, and you could see that this guy is of the scrimmages, and where players are trying things out. And I get trying things out in a scrimmage mentality. It's a whole other thing to go into like preseason game, you know, with fans watching against other NBA players, and like legitimately be out of your wits. Would appear to be someone not confident in how he even wants to shoot the ball. And that's just different. I don't ever like playing the armchair psychologist, but you could visibly, you know, tangibly see the results. And I want to get your thoughts. You did video for years. How is that? I wanted to ask you about this. Like, what are your thoughts on watching this as someone who probably, you know, scoured over video for people's forums for many, many hours?
It's weird. mean, yeah. If you want the expert opinion right there. I mean, I didn't understand why. And I don't think anybody did. And it's hard to kind of get that, like, why would you why? Like, there was just no reason for it. And it's like, you know, that's something you don't want to mess up, you know, your shot. Even if your shot's a little bit unorthodox, at least, you know, if you're making them at a consistent rate, it's muscle memory, your body's used to it. This is something that, okay, it might have stuff. We might be able to tweak a thing here or there, but you don't kind of like almost overhaul it.
Right.
And it's such a weird kind of thing where I'm just like, dude, what are you doing? I haven't heard a good explanation for why he did it.
Yeah, or a responsible party for suggesting it.
Yeah, because it doesn't sound like the Sixers were involved in this, which is another thing that's kind of weird to me, too. I'm just like, well, you know, when was he working on this? You know, it wasn't in Summer League, so it had to have been after Summer League. You know, I wonder if Danny Ainge is kind of trying to sabotage him so he doesn't look like he's in a tough spot, having traded the number one pick, going like, you should really kind of change your form there, buddy. Like, started trying to drop like Inception into him in Vegas or something. I don't know. It's certainly a weird prospect. It has me flustered. Like, I honestly don't even know what to really think of it. You know, I went through and watched a lot of clips today, and it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, it's just a bad thing. There's things you experiment with, but that's not something like when you have a shot that works and your mechanics work, you're good, you're set. Now if your shot like mechanics are way out of whack and you're not making it, then you overhaul your shot, and that takes time. Like, overhauling your shot kind of takes almost an entire year.
Especially when you're just coming into the league, like, you has not game tested said shot before he changed it, you know. I it's bizarre. It's also, that was a strength of his. Like, he was high percentiles in true shooting and contested shooting and all these things that made him the number one pick. And a lot of that has to do with his shooting ability. So for that to be the thing that he's tweaking, I hope it's injury. And I would not put it past the Sixers organization to not be transparent about an injury. go figure. Crazy. Yeah. I know. Amazing. Joel signs his contract and he's playing in the preseason game the next day. But whatever. You know, I'm not here to put Sixers conspiracies into the Jump Ball podcast here. But I will say this, man. Like, when Fultz got picked number one, that put pressures he's probably never felt before and certainly didn't feel at Washington on him. And maybe, you know, he started nitpicking some perfectionists. And I'll give you like a tennis analogy, but like Novak Djokovic wasn't the player he became until he got, you know, his toss on his serve and really figured out how to serve the ball. And you're like, this guy's a top 10 player in the world, but he didn't break through until he really perfected and got over his own mental glitch. Look at, you know, Sergio Garcia and golf. And like, there's different great players who have little things that they're in their own head about. And it was a free throw for Fultz. And now it seems to have affected his entire shot. And that's hopefully something that he fixes before Monday of next week.
Please, if you just go back to what you were doing before, that'd be great.
Do the other thing. Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing, though, to kind of calm me a little bit about Fultz, mm-hmm. too, though, is I like what I saw, though, of him trying to get to the rim and things like that. You know, he's got a little shake and bake and things like that. You know, he has a nice mm-hmm. spin move to the rim. I think he needs to be careful with how much he uses the spin move. But there are a couple of times where I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Other times I'm like, you spun into the defense, not away from them. So you got to figure out when to use it. But overall, like, I'm like, okay, we got to get his shot back on track. And hopefully it's something that they can get done. You know, and maybe you're right. And it might be just the shoulders really bothering him and he's trying to tweak it and things like that. But, you know, hopefully they can get him back on track. The other guy, you know, we're finally getting to see Ben Simmons play NBA games.
Yeah.
And I love it. I see people on Twitter going like, he has no real offensive skill set. He has no real this or that, or they don't know what to expect from him. Listen, jumpers take time to develop, so I didn't think he was going to come in and have a jumper right now. But, you know, with comparisons of people comparing him to Rondo, I'm like, yo, he's got a stride that's so much longer than Rondo that if you back up too much, in two steps, he's already at the rim, and then he's finding cutters, and the guys are they're looking to cut more. There's a lot more baseline cuts, whereas he's driving, he finds those guys on the baseline for a little layup and stuff like that. Like, I like what I'm seeing from Simmons. What have you seen so far, and what do you think?
Yeah, I feel like with Simmons, and this year is going to be interesting in general for the Sixers with all these new pieces, but specifically, like, he has a skill set that changes the whole flow of the game. Like, there are 55 second spans where he just gets like rebound goes, and it almost feels like he's playing with little kids. He has this like incredible ability, I completely agree with you, to eat up the court, similar to LeBron and to Kevin Durant and Westbrook, and guys who, before you know it, they're past you and you can't take your eyes off of him. And that changes defensive mentality, who you're picking up, where you're picking them up. You know, the weird thing, and this is not a new thought at all, is that he does not know what hand he is. He is a right-handed human being, it would appear, who thinks he's left-handed, and even instinctually, sometimes he tries. You know, he had a really awkward play in the first quarter of this preseason game where he came off a little pick and he screened down low, low to low, and he had maybe 5 feet from the rim, 6-7 feet from the rim, and like instead of just a little left-handed shot or an immediate right-handed floater, pump faked himself, palmed the ball, and pushed it with his right hand, and it was like, holy crap! It looked like someone who like had a shoulder injury and wasn't able to shoot over his head properly. It was just bizarre. But, you know, he's shooting free throws like 38% this preseason with left hand. I'm pretty sure with his right hand he could shoot 38% from the free throw line. So the bar is not set at elite shooter. You might as well make the move. But I'll say this, in terms of innate passing ability, court vision, object permanence, the things you want in an elite point guard, he has everything else. He guards really well, big to small. When he was in the game with Saric in the second quarter, they were playing interchangeable center together, you know, and the basketball IQ between those two, and that's going to be a special combination, is extremely high. They're both great passers. And obviously, you know, each 6'10 or taller. So in this NBA, that's great to have two 6'10 guys who both can bang. Simmons goes to take those boards because he wants that initial push. He wants to be the one-man fast break. And look, when Smart wings are on the court with him, when J.J. Redick is in the game, when Covington's in the game, you know, to a lesser extent, Stauskas when he comes in. But, like, you find the corner, and in transition, he's going to put the ball on your chest, and you're going to have an open corner three. So my thoughts are that the highs are going to be high. The lows are going to be like, oh, my God, he shot 2 for 11, had 7 points, 11 assists, and, like, 9 boards. And you got to just kind of take that with a grain of salt until he really understands his scoring ability, if that ever comes along.
Yeah, I mean, he can definitely fill up the stat sheet. Yeah. You know, there's definitely going to be nights where he's going to have, I mean, he could easily have a night of 10, 10, and 10.
Yep.
You know, I think that's something we can see from him. I don't think he's going to average that. We saw it with Westbrook. We saw how hard it is. It's not going to be Ben Simmons. No. You know, I just think, again, as a whole, this team just has so many pieces, able to play so many different ways, so many different guys that they can develop great chemistry amongst each other. You know, what's your expectations for the Sixers this year?
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, Vegas had them initially at 41.5 games, and I'm sure it probably went down into the high 30s or mid to high 30s. And then I'm sure it's going to go back up after people watch Embiid play, because, and we were having this discussion, obviously Prada would tell me that I'm insane, but I think when Embiid plays, they're going to be, I was a little hyperbolic and said like the second best winning percentage when he plays, which isn't going to happen, but they could be the fourth best team for sure in the Eastern Conference if Embiid was healthy. But realistically, and knowing how many games that if he stays healthy, we're even going to let him play with the growing pains that we're already seeing with Fultz, and Simmons will display, and the chemistry you need to gain with all the new players who are coming onto this roster, including Bayless, who barely played last year too. And how you integrate a guy we haven't even talked about, Jahlil Okafor. Like, is he still on the roster? And there's a great piece on SB Nation today I would tell people to go read. You know, has the process failed Jahlil Okafor? And it's interesting. You feel for the kid. And that in its own right makes me a little upset about how we treated him. You know, he's still a player on the team. He's still part of the guys. He's still an emotional and young human. And you got to, you know, have that workplace respect. And the Sixers have not provided that for Okafor. So as great as they've treated him, you know, Embiid in terms of making him the franchise player, I still wish they had, you know, worked out ways to communicate better and or help, you know, Okafor's career more, because it's not his fault. He is who he is. We drafted him at 3 overall ahead of Porzingis, you know. But, Yeah, my expectations are that ultimately I think they're going to be like the 7 seed potentially in the East at maybe 40 wins. So, you know, that's where I think the Eastern Conference is going to be this year. I think like 39 wins might be like the 7 seed potentially also. Like it could really be like that. And, you know, I was picking over-unders with some of my friends that we do each season, and like, you know, I gotta be honest, man, I picked the Sixers under 41.5 because at the time I was just like, that means they're going to know how to win together right away. And they start the season with a really difficult stretch. And that's just kind of unrealistic. It takes time to build this chemistry. You know, plus, in general, they are what they are compared to, like, you know, the other quality teams in the league. But the rest of the East is kind of garbage. So with that in mind, I think they're right around 40 wins, which feels like an incredible jump from the barely double-digit win team we were a couple years ago.
Yeah, I'm going to probably give you a hot take that wasn't maybe said last year. I mean, this is about last season.
Sure.
But I honestly believe if Embiid was healthy, you know, after the All-Star break, I really think they would have competed for the eight seed last year.
Yeah, I do too.
It was up for grabs. I would look at it and they were within like four games or something like that. And, you know, the Bulls backed into it, you know, and I don't know if they would have gotten it, but I think they would have made it at least into the beginning of April with a chance to get it if Embiid was healthy. So for me, if Embiid's healthy this year, they're a playoff team.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, in actual schedule last year, the Sixers played a really soft end-of-the-year schedule against they had the Knicks two of their last three games, and a lot of teams would already quit. So had they been playing for something, you might not be far off. And ultimately, it gives them something to play up to this season as a next stepping stone, as opposed to having to, like, face the challenges of, hey, we were a playoff team, and now we're integrating all these young guys. What does that mean? That's how I'm looking at it.
And the other thing, too, about the Sixers is they have pieces to move if they really want to. Mm-hmm. You know,
oh, yeah.
You talked about Okafor in that piece, and I'm going to make sure I read that. I hope my listeners do as well. You know, all five of you and my new dog, Thumper. And I think, you know, if it turns out there's not minutes for Bayless, like, that's a guy that a team's going to want some scoring off the bench. And you can get in it. I mean, they're in a pretty good spot. Like, I kind of envy the Sixers a bit for the position they're in. But I think they're a playoff team if Embiid's healthy. If he's not healthy, if he's only playing 30 games, it's going to be a tough run. But they have they still have a lot of young talent that we could really see some interesting things come from them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't even mention, and last but not least here, but Furkan Korkmaz is an interesting player too. People remember that name. He's got a beautiful stroke and he's kind of a springy athlete. Turkish kid. He's like 22 years old as well. So just another guy to add to the depth.
He kind of was just like a late add, like a quiet add to the roster.
And yes.
He's shooting 50% from three and everybody was talking about him after the scrimmage.
That's right.
So I think you're right there. We got to keep our eye on Korkmaz and see how that works out.
That's right.
But let's move on a little bit before this becomes the whole Sixers podcast. And if you want more Sixers talk, listen to SB Nation's Sixers preview. They've done almost all 30 teams at this point, and I've listened to pretty much all of them. And you might know one of the guests on the Clipper podcast.
Spoiler alert. Yes.
So here's my next fun question. And, you know, I guess we're going to put the Sixers in there, so we're not going to talk about them.
Sure.
But what non-playoff team last season do you think will make the playoffs this year? And it kind of goes two ways in this question because, you know, who's not going to be in the playoffs that's going to, you know, that they're going to kind of miss that spot? So go ahead, go for it.
Sure. Okay, so I think I'll give you one for each conference. I think that I know a lot of people are picking the Timberwolves, obviously, but I think that's almost too easy. So I'll tell you, I think Denver could be the eight seed. I think they're an interesting team who, again, when healthy, new identity insofar as Gary Harris is locked down, Jokic is the guy. I love the, you know, home advantage they consistently have by playing in Denver when they are a good team, and this is a fun team to watch. I always kind of find myself rooting for the Nuggets for some reason. I think it has to do with Mutombo and then a 90s thing and when they beat the Supersonics, and my dad was a Supersonics fan. It's a lot of things in there. But with that in mind, yeah, I think Denver in the Western Conference, I think Memphis will miss the playoffs this year. I also would not be surprised if the Clippers miss the playoffs, in which case those are your two outs, and or Utah. Any of those three could be on the way out for Minnesota and for Denver to walk in. And look, Portland's going to be right there as well. That grouping of Western Conference teams, very interesting to watch this year. And then in the Eastern Conference, I think the Heat are going to be in. I think they obviously probably should have made it last year. Came so close. And the Bulls will be out. That goes without saying. The Pacers are going to be out too, and that's where the Sixers are going to come in.
There we go. I mean, you hit it on. I'm kind of and Thumper's a bit upset with you for saying the Timberwolves weren't going to make it to the playoffs. If you don't know who Thumper is, he's my husky dog. He is the co-host of the Jump Ball podcast, but the silent co-host. But he gave
me a look.
He
pulls the strings behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, like, he edits the podcast, so your part might not make it. But his head definitely perked up when you said Timberwolves weren't going to make the playoffs. I'm just telling you, he walked away very upset. That said, I kind of think the Wolves might be, I think they can do it. This has got to be the year. You know, you think so.
They have a lot of talent.
They have a lot of talent. And I think there is a, I think, you know, there's a potential for two of those teams that you mentioned between Utah, Clippers, and Memphis to miss the playoffs, you know, yeah. And Portland. I mean, theoretically, three of them could miss. I mean, maybe not, because math doesn't work that way. So eight teams have to make it, and we know the bottom of the Western Conference is pretty.
Yeah, someone's got to make it. Mavs might be in that picture. Who knows?
Yeah, but he. I think that's kind of the thing. I think the Wolves have a ton of talent. I think if they can figure out defensively what they, you know, what Tibbs wants them, you know, and if Jimmy, yep, Butler can really influence them to really play defense and push, and he hasn't been great at that leadership role, so that's the one thing I'm a little worried about. You know, there's always this talk about his leadership and his mentality.
Yep.
If he can push Wiggins to actually play defense and care about defense, I'll be pretty happy, and I think they'll be in a good position.
Yeah, their over under for the season was like 48.5 wins when it first came out, which is like
stupid.
That's stupid. I don't really know how Vegas set that, but that was, I remember that one jumped off the page at me, because it was like, well, that they're going to go from zero, you know, not zero to 100 in actual wins, but like in terms of win totals, to go from not making the playoffs to being almost a 50 win team is ludicrous. But,
well, I mean, people thought that last year just by them getting Tibbs that they were going, right, to be a 50 win team. I was like, yo, they're still really young.
Right.
And right, in that regard. So I think it's still a process for them, but I think this is going to be the year they break that run of no playoff spots. You know, I like Denver. Denver's definitely got a lot of great stuff going for them. You touched on it, Gary Harris and all those guys. In the East, I'm with you. I think it's Miami. I mean, we both already said the Sixers are going to make it, but I think Miami is going to make the playoffs this year. I think, you know, they just barely missed it. You know, they brought those guys back together, adding Olynyk and things like that, I think really help. You know, if Justice Winslow can turn out to be a valuable member to the team, I think that there's no question in that regard, right, that they'll make the playoffs. The other team is Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Hornets. I think they're in a good situation. I think they're going to – I know Batum's out, but, you know, Malik Monk just put up 21 today. I think he was a good add for that team. I think they missed it last year, but if Cody Zeller was healthy, I think they probably make it, you know, as well. So I think,
agreed,
this is a team, if it's weird for a team to survive on whether Cody Zeller is healthy or not. Like, the words just don't flow out of my mouth properly.
Welcome to the Eastern Conference 2017-2018 season.
Exactly. Like, their, yeah, season kind of depends on Cody Zeller's health in that regard. So, you know, I think they're going to make it as well. So, yep, it's going to be influx. And for the teams that don't, I have a great answer for what they should do next spring, and they should all come to LA and check out Uli's Gelateria. We have now two, you hear me, Ben, two gelato spots.
Fantastic. Where are they?
We have the one in downtown LA in the Spring Arcade in between 5th and 6th Street. You can't go wrong there. You got that one. Then we have a new one, which is in the Beverly Grove area, right near the Grove in LA.
I used to work right near there. I wish it was there when I worked there.
Yeah, I mean, you would have had a ton of gelato. And let me just tell you about the gelato place. Uli's Gelateria has the most fantastic flavors. I mean, Speculoos cookies are my favorite. I actually have a tub of it in my freezer right now, so you can always take some to go home. You know, they have pistachio, olive oil, and you can't go wrong, man. And for my vegan friends, they have vegan flavors as well. Not all of them, but there are flavors that are vegans. Just make sure you know which ones are which, and I'm telling you, you can't go wrong. Ben, next time you're in LA, dude, gelato on me.
Appreciate it. Can't wait.
There we go, my man. There we go. Well, let's go into a little more interesting stuff here. It's still a week away from the season beginning, or a few days away, and I'm going to ask you for the way too early prediction for MVP. Who's your pick?
Yeah, my entirely too early, but I think Kawhi gets it this year, because I think it's hard for me to see the Spurs disappearing. I think they're still going to be in that top three conversation. Top four, obviously, in the West is going to be tight, but I think they're going to find their way into a top three seed. And with that in mind and how good the West is going to be and how individually important he is for the Spurs, it's going to be difficult for him not to stand out. Whereas these other teams he'll be competing with, there's going to be a little of that diffusion of success where, you know, you can only give so much credit to each of the amazing players, you know, on the Warriors, on the Rockets, and on OKC, whereas Kawhi is going to usurp more of that. The only other person I could see as my early front runner, just based upon what he decides to do in terms of minutes played and games played and all that stuff, is LeBron, because there's this whole crusade of LeBron thing, which is like, now I need to prove to Kyrie individually that he was wrong. So I like that angle, but I don't know if he's going to actually care enough to play enough. And that would probably hurt that. So Kawhi is my way too early MVP.
Kawhi is a good one. And you're right. Like, all those guys got help this year.
Yep.
So kind of the same reason why I don't think KD would win it next year is that same thing of, you know, the same reason why Russ won't this year, why James Harden won't this year. I think for the Spurs, for Kawhi Leonard to win it, I think they got to win 55, 60 games this year. I think they got to finish second in the West, and he's got to just – And if they do that, it's because of him. There's no real name there, you know, unless LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, has been screwing around with us.
And Rudy Gay comes back from a torn Achilles to be better than he's ever been in his career.
Yes, exactly. And not kill a team.
Right.
You know, I'm surprised you didn't go with Embiid.
Yeah, I can't wish that upon myself.
Disappointed. No, and then the LeBron angle is an interesting one as well. Like, is he just going to come out and, like, Bill Simmons of the Ringer, with the Ringer, obviously the guy who starts the Ringer, but with ESPN, used to say, like, Brady had an FU kind of attitude, you know, the Deflategate season where he was kind of like, FU, I'm just going to go off.
Right.
You know, that's what we're talking about with LeBron. Are we going to get the FU Kyrie season, or is, you know, he going to just kind of stay the course and keep doing what he's doing? I don't know if there are that many other good options really for MVP.
I thought about Anthony Davis or Carl Anthony Towns, if either of them put up historical weird numbers, you know, like 30, 12, 5 blocks. Like, their Embiid could go right in that same category, but team success is such an important, you know, indicator for who's going to, you know, win. And unfortunately, I can't see any of those teams propelling players far enough.
Yeah, and then the other guy that could be interesting, that's probably the dark horse, is Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Sure.
You know, in Milwaukee. If they can take the leap and really be a top four team in the East, and, you know, he really kind of propels them to be that team, you know, I could see everybody wanting to give it to him.
That would make Prada, that would make Prada so happy. You don't even, probably more so than if John Wall were to win it, Giannis.
I don't know. If Wall won it, he come on. Like, when was the last time something great happened to the Wizards?
I don't know. That would probably make up for the fact that no Washington team has been to even a conference final since 1998, I believe. So, or was it 97? Whenever the Capitals were last there. But yeah, you're right. You're right. It's
Does hockey count?
It's a great call. I don't know. Is this like a hot dog, a sandwich? I'm not sure.
Yeah, you know, not sure. And the hot dog's not a sandwich. We could fight about that on another day. But you know, John Wall is actually another interesting guy too for MVP. I think, you know, he kind of touted, like, hey, I'm the best point guard in the league, you know, this summer. Well, if you're going to be the best, if you're going to say that, you got to back it up. So this would be the year to do it if you're going to talk that trash.
Yep. Agreed.
Let's move on from that, because it's true. Like, there's not that many options, but we have a new All-Star game kind of format coming here, and I haven't really had a chance to talk about this with anybody. So you're going to be my guy.
Fantastic. Love it.
For those who don't know, the All-Star game is going to be set up by the two top vote-getters are going to be the captains of their teams, and it's going to be like playground style, where they get to pick their teams. Not too much has come out about the draft, about how that's going to happen. All we know is it's going to be a mix of the conferences. That's all we know. And the two top guys are going to pick their guys. My man, what are your thoughts?
Well, first off, I love that it highlights the personalities and the interpersonal relationships that exist in the NBA, which is one of the best parts about it, that there are friendships and there are, like, petty disagreements, and then there are, like, real hatred. So the NBA has all those different shades. We don't get that same backstory the same soap opera with other sports as much. You just don't, especially hockey.
We're just trashing hockey today. Wow.
And I like hockey, Mo. That's the thing. I'm like a diehard Flyers fan. But anyhow,
I love going to a Kings game. I think they're the most fun live. But
we digress. So I love that the NBA is kind of accentuating one of the things that fans already like. With that in mind, I think it's great. I think it's like a great homage to how teams were picked when these guys probably, you know, started playing basketball, or what they would do in a summer pickup game, which I, you know, watched firsthand back in my Hacks days. So, like, yeah, I'm always appreciative when the NBA lets the personality shine. I think this is just another way to let that happen. And I'm excited to see, you know, whatever little mini feuds or if anything comes out of it that extends into, like, the real games after. Like, yo, you didn't pick me and I'm going to go extra hard at you. I got something to prove. Those little chips on the shoulder. So I'm always interested to see how players kind of accept peer critiques. And this is going to be a great way to kind of get some of that.
I'm just curious, are they going to do the draft live? Like,
hope so. I hope they'll, like, stand in a row.
Right. Like, literally, like, you're – and then whoever's last, like, that just sucks, man. You know?
Exactly.
And you know, if KD is the top vote getter, you know, is he going to be picking Russell Westbrook, or is he going to pick Steph Curry if he has the first pick? Exactly. You know, LeBron's not picking Kyrie if he's the top vote getter.
Oh, no. There's no way that happens unless he does it to troll him. See, there's like ways this, like, where he'd be like, he's like, no, now you're on my team again.
Oh, my God. The number of pieces that are going to come out on every website analyzing what each of these picks mean.
Exactly.
In my head, I was like, oh, this is going to be great. There's going to be so much to write about.
Oh, the armchair psychology is going to be just off the charts. I don't even want to – I think I'll have to hide from Twitter that night. But
oh, yeah. Dude. No, like, that's one of those things. That's the day you shut down Twitter. Just enjoy it. Do you think this is going to make the All-Star game more interesting, or do you think it's just the drama of picking the guys and then the All-Star game still going to be garbage? Because it's pretty bad, and it has been for about the past 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I don't think you can really change that. I think there's a financial awareness mechanism to the game. Can't go that hard. It doesn't matter. You know, like, now, if every player won $1 million on the winning team, like, the only way to ever make this worth their while is to incentivize it to a place where they want the money. Like, I'm sorry, but, like, they're professional athletes. You wouldn't, like, have a bunch of accountants do a bunch of extra taxes because they're the best at it for fun. They'd be like, no, pay me. So, you know, I think you have to extend that analogy to how much effort you get in the game. But with that in mind, maybe you'll get some kind of, because the way the teams are picked, some matchups that will play the, you know, a little bit harder. Like, if John Wall and Damian Lillard have to go head to head for, like, an extended period of minutes, that could create some nice one-on-one battles. You know, you start to think about little matchups that might push the game into a more aggressive tempo or atmosphere. That's kind of, I think, how you get there.
Yeah, I heard an interesting idea not too long ago, and I wish I remember where it came from. It's definitely not an original thought from my end, so nobody think that. But it would be kind of cool if they did each player picks a charity.
Yep.
And whatever winning team, this money goes to the charity, and the losing team, you know, has a certain amount too that goes to their charities. And just kind of, at least kind of, I think that's, you know, these guys' contracts are tied to whether they make the All-Star game or not. You know, they're going to see a raise. They're going to see a bump on it. So, you know, in that regard, like, Embiid's contract can really shoot up if he makes, you know, All-NBA or All-Star team and all that stuff. And, you know, Rihanna will probably go on a date with him like he was hoping for last season. You know,
that's going to actually happen at some point, by the way.
Probably does have to happen on our reality TV show following Joel Embiid. I don't know if he's going to authorize it, but we're just going to take cameras and follow him around. And we'll see what happens. But I think that's, like, I think that might make things interesting. And you're right. Like, the guys have to have some skin in the game. But I think also fans would be more excited if they were, or would feel better if it was, hey, we're giving to a charity. And this is coming from a guy who has not watched the All-Star game easily in 5 years. You know, like, actually, for a fact, I didn't watch it in the 8 years I worked in the NBA. So it's longer than that.
That's awesome.
You know, because that was my vacation time. Like, yo, I'm out. I'm checking out from hoops, and I'll just watch the highlights later. But I just can't turn it on. Like, it's just such bad basketball.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the principle behind any exhibition sport when you've had the real thing. You know, it's the problem with preseason football as a sport is that you can't fake football. And that's the thing. You can fake basketball and hockey and baseball and, you know, sports like that where effort determines the outcome of the game. But, you know, in football, like, you hit someone, that's part of the play. And so I always found that the Pro Bowl was the worst of all professional all-star games because it takes that part out of, which is a fundamental aspect of the game. The first parts of the NBA All-Star Game are fun dunk competition extensions, and then sometimes maybe you get a last good 5 minutes. That's really all you're looking for, Mo.
Yeah, let me ask you this, because you did just bring up the dunk contest, which has been bad as well lately.
But yeah, it has.
Who would you like to see in this year's dunk contest? Pick three guys. Who are the three guys you want to say, like, I want to see these guys in the dunk contest?
Okay, so I want to see Giannis in the dunk contest for sheer how far away from the basket can you jump from to dunk, because that's got to be on the everyone's mind when you see him in a game. Like, he's thinking about it. A lot of times he's thinking about just inside the three-point line. And
are you thinking if he dunks from the three-point line, it's a three?
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd have to be.
Yeah, it'd have to be. And if you give him 10. But, so he's one. Wiggins is two. Wiggins had some of the most ridiculous highlights in high school of anyone I've ever seen dunk. And it kind of disappoints me that I haven't really had the full opportunity to see him do some creative dunks yet. He's never been in a dunk contest, right?
No, I don't remember him being in one.
He wouldn't go against Levine, which was a part of the dynamic. Look, if Zach Levine's healthy, put him in every single season, but let's not rush him back. I was trying to think of a third. You know, Dennis Smith Jr., I always like when little guys dunk, and at rookies, it's good to get exposure and kind of build your brand. He can absolutely fly, and he's got really nice symmetry on his dunks, hands spread apart nicely. He had a few dunks against Duke last year, which was probably his biggest stage game he had. He had a triple-double at Cameron Indoor, where he had those, like, beautiful drive down the lane, tomahawk, ball cocked back. And when you're 6'1", everything looks better. So give me those three.
Yeah, I'm with you on Dennis Smith Jr. I find a hard time watching big guys dunks, like, in dunk contests. I almost not sure if Giannis is with all his limbs and floating around every which way. I want to see if he can unveil the three-point dunk. That's all I want to see. If he can do that, then I want him in the dunk contest. If he can't, I'm not all that interested. You know, after that, I don't pay enough attention in the dunk, like, to who can be in-game dunkers, you know, versus, like, who can be amazing dunkers and if they had the chance. Right. But I want to see Larry Nance Jr. just to kind of step in his father's footsteps. I know this goes against what I said about big men dunking, but, you know, kind of that lineage and that storyline, that would be fun. I don't even think I have a third. I got to kind of see the season a little bit more and figure out who I'd want in it. But I just hope it's a good dunk contest.
Yeah, let's bring some positive attention back to All-Star Game weekend. I think the new draft format for the All-Star Game itself is a good start. And maybe if some superstars decided they wanted to get back into the dunk contest, that'd be cool too. But
and, you know, the rookie and sophomore game this year might actually be a lot of fun.
Oh, it usually is the more fun of the games. They care more because they're trying to prove something. Yeah,
and I think that one actually might be a fun one this year because, you know, you're going to have Simmons and Ball on the same team, hopefully going up against Embiid, and a bunch of other guys, you know, Jaylen Brown versus Jason Tatum. Like, that would be a fun one.
Will Embiid be allowed to play in both games?
I think so. I don't know if he'd want to. I don't know if the Sixers would let him, but if that's what you're getting at. But, but by the rules, he'd be allowed. So I guess, I don't know what their rules are, and I don't know what his agent's rule is now.
Yeah.
I wonder if his agent's just sitting there, you're doing what? No, you're not allowed to go snowboarding this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, this is the off season. No, you're not allowed to do any of this. No fun for you right now, Embiid.
Get back in the bubble wrap.
Yeah. You stay in that bubble. Mm-hmm. All right. Now that we're talking about bubble wrap and Embiid living in a bubble, I think we got to call it a quits here.
We've gone full circle.
We've done it. We've done it, Ben. Ben, tell everybody where they can find you. Plug whatever you want to plug, and let you get out of here.
Cool. Again, thanks for having me on. I always love talking hoops with you. And you can find me talking hoops all the time with Mike Prada, who's the editor of SB Nation's NBA content. You guys probably know him from a number of different things, but I host, and he's, Mike's on the show too, whatever. The Limited Upside podcast on SB Nation. And go check it out, download all that stuff, because we're doing the summer previews. I don't know how many of your favorite NBA podcasts, like do summer previews for every single team with the communities from all the SB Nation communities and all the, you know, the editors from those sites. So we get pretty good perspective, in my opinion. And everyone, Mo already said it, but the type of perspective we get are guys like Mo for the Clippers, right? It's people who really know the team inside and out and live it and breathe it. So, you know, I like to think, Mo, that we have a unique podcast that's both national and local, man. So that's what you can go check out.
I highly recommend it. I'm not kidding when I say I'm pretty sure I've listened to all of them. I'm halfway through the Celtics one right now. And I highly recommend it just for the banana boat question alone, which stressed me out quite a bit.
We have fun with this, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a fun podcast. It's fun to listen to even when they're not doing team previews. Great guys. I can't recommend it enough. And Ben, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Mo.
And that's it for our show today. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Have yourselves a great weekend.